Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And on this show, we're going to bring you over 40 years of combined experience and thousands of transactions handled from the Charlottetown waterfront, where it's an absolutely beautiful day here. It looks like high tide, but we're not seeing any snow or any ice at the end of December. So hope everything is well with you. Thanks for listening. And we're going to get on with MAPS, the acronym for the Michael and Patty Show.
The acronym works out perfect, Michael, when you think about it, because the whole premise of our podcast is helping navigate and guide people through the buying and selling of their PEI properties, as well as everything Prince Edward Island.
Oh, that's awesome. We'll have you drop a new thumbnail this week for the new year, for 2025. So let's get right into the stats, keeping in mind that PEI is a pretty thin market and it doesn't take much to move the needle.
Yeah, so the stats for November, which is comparing November 2023 to November 2024. Now, this was really interesting. Home sales are up 11.8%. So what does that mean? It just, in my opinion, means that consumers are more confident now in going ahead and making the purchase. As a result of the pandemic and our peak that we had in 2021, when everyone was in a panic to buy and relocate to the island, it caused a lot of homeowners and buyers in 2023 to put on the brakes because they didn't want to overpay. The interest rates were going up. But this is starting to show consumer confidence now that they're feeling more comfortable. Home sellers are putting their property on the market, which is also up new listings by 10.1%. And that's just letting me know that consumers feel they have choices going forward as well. Because one of the big complaints, Michael, that I used to receive was I would sell my house, but I have nowhere to go. And that was preventing a lot of people from making a move in 2023 and the latter part of 2022. So things are starting to obviously move. People are feeling more confident. They're accepting with the interest rates. There's been, you know, little reductions happening, which is also triggering a little bit of a market activity.
That's it.
Yeah. And I can also get into, we are in a balanced market currently in November 2024. As well as our benchmark pricing on Prince Edward Island, it has also gone up 1.8%, which is not significant. It's showing things have kind of leveled off a little bit, and we are now recovering from the 2021 inflated prices. So what that number looks like, $367,500 in November 2023 to today, it's $374,200 for the average Prince Edward Island home.
Moving along. So if people are looking at a house or land, what are some of the things they may want to bring with them in the form of documents or people present?
Yeah, and that's a really good point because I find even buyers obviously are not aware and they're trusting their agent. And sometimes agents are a little curious as to how other agents do their business. So this is a very worthwhile topic, Michael, to discuss.
What's the answer?
Oh, would you like me to give the answer? I'll tell you what I do, and then you can tell me what you do and our listeners. I typically bring a property feature sheet. I bring a client view, which just doesn't disclose the seller's information in that. It just has all the property details, and that's all they need. I also bring an orthogeo map for the sake of being able to, because I find many will say, well, where's the property lines? Now, the geo ortho map is only an approximation, but it lets you know, because sometimes you're questioning, is that shed in that back corner on my property or on this property or on the adjacent property? And that can sometimes answer that question. I also bring the property condition disclosure statement, which is a list of items about the systems and the property and any covenants that the seller has disclosed. So if that's available, I bring that. And that's pretty much, oh, and I do bring the history. History, just in case they ask, you know, when, how much did this sell? I thought it was on the market before. Was this not on last year? I can quickly answer those questions right there with them.
Not to inundate them with information overload, but one of the things that some agents will do is they will supply a list of all the homes that have sold, assuming they're in a high density area in a city or a community. So the buyers know how to compare that price against the neighbor sales.
Yeah, I wouldn't get into that. That would be like a step two, only because today I just want to see if they even like the home. I am prepared. Now, I don't give them all that information. I give them the property feature sheet. That's the only sheet that they get. I withhold the PCDS, the ortho, because they're directing the questions back at me. And I want to be able to be in a position to answer them instead of saying, well, that's in your package. Can I have your package? Because that'll be answered in there. I keep that. If they're interested, they'll get the whole package. If they're not interested, I'm not going to inundate them with information they don't need.
And if you give them that information, you're going to exceed the limitation or the time limit on the showing. Most showings do not, you know, the owners don't want them to be over an hour. And some showings could be as quick as open the door, look around, and run out towards the driveway if it's a property that's not really desirable for that particular purchase. Could be a matter of seconds, not a matter of tens of minutes.
Yeah. So I'd ask you, Michael, what is an average acceptable showing time?
I don't know if I've ever calculated that. I would probably guess 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking something substantive, you know, 100-acre farm or something with 25 outbuildings or something bizarre like that. But we're just talking average residential house. It doesn't take a long time for most people to walk through it and make a decision. Then, of course, the best methodology I've developed is you compare showing number one against showing number two, and then you delete one of them. That way you're not getting into analysis paralysis trying to compare five houses, which you shouldn't see more than probably five, maybe six houses in a day in order to avoid confusion, and try to keep the houses in the same price range and align with each other as far as bedrooms, bathrooms, square feet. So you're comparing apples to apples, because common sense dictates a house that's on for $1.3 million in most cases, if it's priced properly, and one that's $300,000 are obviously going to be different. Moving along, partially, we forgot to answer another part of that point, is who do you bring along to the showing? Anyone that makes the buying decision.
That would be correct.
So you're not wasting the agent's time going through a house five times because you got six different people that want to see it at different times. Bring them all through the house at the same time just to speed up the process. And not be a major inconvenience to the vendor having a multitude of showings with the same parties present or a bunch of different parties present.
Well, that's what it really comes down to is the seller, because some sellers will spend 4, 6 hours, sometimes a day or two prior to, because they want that house to show like it could be featured on Homes and Gardens, and they put a great deal of time. So it's best if you're going to schedule a viewing, have everyone present, and if they can't, FaceTime them, Zoom them in, Skype them in, whatever you need to do. There are means and technology allows for that to happen.
Right. Moving along to point number two, or discussion number two, is paperwork. It's really, really important to make sure that your paperwork is perfect and the dates align and everything's initialed and signed and the clauses and the phrases are understandable and everybody agrees with them. Because there's too many situations these days where you've got agreements that have dates that don't align, you've got things that aren't signed, things that are scribbled aren't, that are initialed as an omission. We've got, well, we have recorded this conversation last week, I have this text from a month ago about something we said, and then we got an email I got yesterday. And then you're supposed to have a compilation of all this noise at closing to try to figure out what's going on. At the end of the day, your paperwork should be the only thing you're going by, because that's the paperwork that lawyers are going to see, and it's going to eliminate confusion so your closing isn't delayed and you don't end up in a court case because the paperwork's messy. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. And so the amendments, Michael, one of the things that I find, amendments and deletions, there's a at the very top of the page for our Prince Edward Island Real Estate Association approved documents, it states that it is dated, and then it has, you put the date in and it says this agreement. That line is the date of the agreement. So I want you to just imagine if that date was today's date, whereas the agreement was dated a month ago, and then you do another amendment a week later, and that is dated for this agreement on that date. And then something ends up going sideways, and now you're trying to figure out what the storyline is, but every amendment and document after the agreement is all referencing a different agreement of purchase and sale date. It becomes a complete nightmare. So if you are an agent listening to this, that agreement section at the top of the page is the date of the original contract agreement that any amendment, any document thereafter is referencing.
And then the counteroffer, you have the same confusion with the dates not aligning.
I agree.
Moving on to the next point, is it okay for buyers, husbands, wives, cousins to contact the listing agent when they're negotiating on a property?
No.
If they have their own representation, their own buyer's agent?
I've seen everything from parents of first-time home buyers thinking they're going to do a side deal or negotiate something better by contacting the other agent on the other side. Please do not do that. You have your representation. You've selected, secured, and hopefully you're under, whether it's a buyer's agreement or if you are a seller, you have a listing contract agreement with an agent. We are to communicate with our professional. When you get these side conversations, that's when things become very messy. And I will hear, well, I spoke with the listing agent directly and this is what they said. And they want to use that, again, referencing back to the previous topic that we were just talking about. Then it creates all this chaos and confusion. And they're saying, well, the listing agent told us this. Well, it's not documented. It didn't go through me. I can't vouch for you if you had a private agreement and the couch was included and now it's our final walkthrough and that couch isn't there or whatever that item is or the item wasn't fixed. I've seen an array of different issues as a result of cross conversation, and all you're doing is cross contaminating this whole interaction and making it even messier. So stay in your lane, speak to your agent, and hopefully you feel confident and you have a good agent who's going to discuss and not over discuss things, because that's what we do. We're trained negotiators and we know how much to share and what we are allowed and what we're not allowed.
And of course, the other thing that comes up as a side note from time to time is people will write an offer and then they won't include certain contents of the property. But then they'll say, well, it's on the cut sheet that the fridge and the stove and the kitchen stools are included. Well, that doesn't really matter at the end of the day if it's not in the purchase and sale. Some will argue, well, if it's a full price offer, they get all that stuff. Don't add to confusion. If you want the stuff, put it in the purchase and sale.
Yeah, and that I have also seen, just because it's on the property feature sheet and it says the freezer is included and you get there on final walkthrough, you did not list it. It has to be itemized and listed within the contract as a chattel for the purchase. If not, it's probably not going to be there.
Now, here's something kind of funny or ironic where people are applying for IRAC approval, irac.pe.ca. You'll find the information there if you're buying over 5 acres or 165 feet of water frontage. Or they have a mortgage in place. What we're finding happens from time to time is IRAC or the people holding the financing on the house will Google the purchaser's names and see what they find online. In the past, there's been people with criminal backgrounds, members of organized crime organizations. There's been all kinds of stuff that Google has found where IRAC has turned the application down because of that, and they won't tell you this because it's the house of secrecy, and financing will be canceled at the last moment because of this, because mortgages are going through so many levels of check sums and check systems that somebody will pull that up and then pull the financing or cancel the IRAC application or decline it, more appropriately.
Yeah, and they do reserve the right. So just because financing does get approved and say it's 4 weeks prior to your closing date, the lender reserves the right all the way up until closing date to continue to do research on you. If you all of a sudden booked plane tickets or a cruise and now your ratios are not in alignment, if you had a criminal activity in the last year, I've had on both sides of this transaction where I had a buyer client who closing was about 2.5 months out, obviously the lender, it was going to go do their due diligence and look up this person and make sure everything was all in good order, only to find out that this particular buyer was being charged with break-in entries, stealing a little old lady's purse and her car. It was all out there in Google. And obviously this deal did not come together. No, it was very upsetting to my seller, obviously, because she had already moved out. And this was all discovered within days of closing, which is why you want a nice deposit to make it a little less painful if situations like this arise. But make sure that you keep your business clean. You don't do anything stupid. You don't make any big purchases, because between IRAC and lenders, they will search and they will find information on you if it is available. So the next item that I wanted to bring up today, Michael, was incorrect information that has been recorded on the MLS from the listing agent. I cannot stress the importance of having all this information accurate, because what could come up as a result? So we just had a recent situation at our office where we are representing the buyer, and you wouldn't believe, because the postal code was incorrect, this property didn't close. And that was because the lender ended up feeling that, well, all their documentation was incorrect. There's the wrong postal code down. And this was discovered as a result of the insurance company. The insurance certificate that was submitted to the lender for confirmation that insurance was going to be in place, there was a discrepancy between the information on the mortgage documentation and what was on the insurance certificate. Right now, we are in the process of this purchase and sale being extended by a week, but they can't guarantee that it's only going to take a week to redraft all this documentation again, as well as the title information, because everything ended up in an error with not the correct information that's caused a delay. The listing brokerage assumes responsibility to make sure the parcel ID number is correct, making sure that the address is correct, making sure that your square footage is correct. The liability falls on the listing brokerage. So please, if you're a listing agent listening, double check, recheck. If you have to, 3 to 5 times, just go through and check everything. If you're a buyer's agent, don't trust because human error, we do all make mistakes. Pull the geo, see what it states, reconcile it with Canada Post, make sure the PID is correct, make sure the community is correct. Because some people, if they're locals to PEI, they may always call this particular community, you know, ABC. And here on the government site, it's registered as another community. These are all issues that we've come across. Please make sure your information is correct.
When I first came to PEI, I was just absolutely shell-shocked at the prices. When I first moved here, just over 25 years ago, you could buy a waterfront home for $40,000. Mind you, that house was probably floating on the water, and it's probably in the water now, albeit, but there's still a considerable difference between the values where I moved from and PEI. So your instinct is to compare values at home to here and then make emotional decisions and buy everything in sight because it's such an awesome deal, only to find out you've probably overpaid. So from time to time, I go through houses, and I did this recently, where you've got someone that's purchased a house. In this case, it was around 250, 280. And of course, 5 years later, they figure it's worth $1 million and change, which they may or may not get. They probably won't get. It's in a B-minus location. Actually, it's on a road that's known for bootleggers and whiskey runners. I don't think they do that anymore, but that's what it's known for. Word of caution, if you're looking at real estate anywhere on earth, make sure you understand the market and you have somebody like Patty or myself or an agent that's experienced, and they meet that expert level, which is someone that's done that 10,000 hours full-time, 5 years, 40 hours a week, 1,000 transactions, to lend you their advice and insight as to you know, is this property, you know, why did it go from 250 to 1.3? Well, the fact is it didn't. And many of these properties, and I'll ask you if you agree or disagree, are usually for sale by owners.
They typically are.
This one happens to be a for sale by owner, which doesn't surprise me because they've probably talked to a bunch of agents. The agent said, well, the market's probably around 5 to 6. Nope, my property's worth $1 million and change. But don't be the one that's the last one with the hot potato, because you could end up buying this property and never, ever, ever being able to sell it to get your money back out if situations change. And we've already, last episode, we covered our forever home. It may not be your forever home, so it's always nice to have an exit strategy. Anything you want to add to that?
No, they just need to make sure that they do not overpay and that they have representation. Again, I can't stress the importance of having an agent who understands the market. And like you said, perhaps a house in Toronto, a little bungalow, would be worth $1.4 million, and here they see it as, my goodness, it's only $550 or $600, whereas really, say, in that particular market area, and again, our prices vary, a dollar on the far west side is different than a dollar on the far east. So an agent who is knowledgeable on the different markets should be able to educate you. I would not personally want to be that agent that ended up going along with whatever the price was on that particular property just because I wanted to get paid. Because that seller, that new owner may want to sell in a year or two's time. And guess what you have to do? The uncomfortable conversation of saying, well, in all reality, you actually overpaid for the property. I made out pretty good because I got a percentage of the sale as my part of my service fees. However, I just feel that's doing a disservice. We always make sure that we tell sellers or buyers, that this is what the property value is as per the stats today, the numbers on our MLS system. And if you do choose to pay this inflated or higher price, please know it may take you 5, 10, who knows how high it's priced, 15 years before you're even going to break even or see an increase in profit on it.
I had somebody look at a piece of land there the other day. It's been on for years. It's an estate sale. So the owner, you know, ended up with this property for free. They put it on the market for $150. Now it's on for $75. So one of their friends directed them to me, and I ended up putting together a 2-page report with about 15 or 20 documents pertaining to this particular property. And within that email, I said, based on market, which I showed them the sales figures, this property's worth between $45,000 and $65,000. So now they have that information. They're armed with it. I also told them that, you know, this is December. You really should have a perk test done, a building permit in place. It'd be nice to have a survey so we know where it is, because this property was half swamped. All that information was provided to them. At the end of the day, yes, they decide to overpay for that property based on market value. They're welcome to do so. But I know I've done my job ethically and morally to educate them. When they come back to me to sell it 2 years down the road when plans change, which often they do, we have this conversation and this paper trail to say, you know, it was worth 45 to 65. Now you're trying to get 100. It's probably worth maybe 65, 70 now. Make sense?
Yeah, makes complete sense.
Now, this next topic, I'm going to ask you for your part-time psychiatrist input here. But you run across buyers sometimes and you just, I can't understand, like, if it's just their mindset that they're just hardwired to be negative and see nothing but the glass is half empty rather than the glass is half full. You'll have buyers that look at properties like this particular property, and I'm looking at it, I think it's priced fairly, it's got a steel roof, it's got new siding, it's got new windows, you can have the incomplete contents, all the appliances, you can keep their kayak, they get a barbecue pit, they put a $50,000 retaining wall in to avoid any coastal erosion. I'm looking at this property, you see all these positive things. It's at the end of a dead-end lane. It's secluded, private, panoramic views, nice sandy beach in front of you. And all they could see is there's a small hole in the roof that needs to be patched. Where does that come from? Because I just shake my head when I hear it.
As soon as I hear that, it red flags for me that they're trying to justify putting in a lowball offer. You can point out all the pluses. Buyer client starts to point out the negative. I just realized that they're trying to justify whatever number they're going to put forth and present to me. And that has been my experience. And it's not too many buyers disappoint me in their reasoning for being negative on a property. They usually guarantee going to come up with a lowball offer that I'm going to have to somehow put it through the Patty filter and make it sound justifiable to the listing agent if I possibly can.
Good input. Other deals. A lot of times we'll have properties where the vendors, the sellers, have to remove furnishings from the property. And when we're signing the contracts, everything's just great. And there's rainbows down every corner. It's not going to be a problem getting rid of 3 truckloads of furnishings. Then, of course, a week or two into the process, they realize their friends are no longer their friends because they're not in the moving business and they're ghosting their phone calls. Have you had that before?
Yes, I have had, and by leaving things behind too, you'll get, again, everything is great as long as it's wonderful, but as soon as it goes sideways, closing date comes and they end up feeling overwhelmed because the seller left more than what they had bargained for, and they just feel, well, that wasn't what we had agreed on. This wasn't what we had agreed on. And now they're going to end up being responsible. Delays closing creates a lot of unnecessary disruption in the closing day, which then impacts the real estate buying or selling experience.
So if you are going to sell your property and promise that stuff is going to be removed out, have a vehicle or a mode to remove that stuff because your agent is not in the moving business for the most part. I wish we were. I did. It is a lot of fun driving those big trucks, U-Haul and stuff. Just a heads up, we have a postal strike and the province of PEI in their newsletter has sent out an advisement that there's many different ways to pay your property taxes. The postal service not being in operation is not an excuse for your property taxes not being paid up to date.
Yes, it's very important to make sure. Since we only have a couple weeks left to the year, the last installment was actually due November 30th. So you're already late if you haven't made your final installment payment, but make sure you get that taken care of.
This next topic here covers a form called the Certificate and Consent of Purchaser-Individual. Tell us what this is about. Can anybody from anywhere on the planet buy any property in Canada?
They can buy property anywhere in Canada as well as on Prince Edward Island. However, because of the prohibition, which is in place until January 1st, 2027, and to cite my source, you can go on the Canadian government site. It is there. I just checked it again this last week. Because I've had a few that were questioning my information. So what the purpose of the certificate and consent of purchaser, and there's one for individual and there's one for corporation, is because of the prohibition all across Canada, there are certain areas and communities that are more densely populated that if you are not approved and fall under, and I'm not going to get into all the criteria because it's been rewritten a few times, so you really need to speak to a lawyer if you are not a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident of Canada, to make sure that you are allowed to purchase in these amalgamated areas. And in Prince Edward Island, we have two. Charlottetown is quite extensive. It extends almost out to Rustico and includes part of Stratford and even up to Pownall area. And then there's Summerside, which doesn't include Kensington, which I find kind of odd they didn't do that, but it does go out to Grand River area. So the purpose of this form and when it's required is when, as a buyer's agent, you are doing your initial intake. That is a requirement for FINTRAC. You are to identify and understand who your buyer is. This certificate and consent of purchaser is part of that process. You should be confirming that you are working with, one, a qualified buyer and they have the funds, two, that they are somebody that's allowed to purchase, and it's okay to ask. I had a few people it's been in the last couple weeks, almost imply that I was being, let's just say, racist because somebody didn't have what would be considered a stereotypical European Canadian name. And it had nothing to do with that. Every single person has to fill out this form, whether you are a Canadian citizen or not, because there's a little box that checks that says none of the above apply, or there's one that, yes, it does apply. And there's no harm in having this document filled out, which if it triggers questions and you do not find yourself in a bad situation, how is that a bad thing? Speak to your lawyer, find out, am I allowed to buy this particular property? Why am I disrupting a seller, getting it under contract, only to find out that this person is not allowed to purchase? Creates a whole lot of chaos and stress that's unnecessary. It is to be done on your initial intake. This is a conversation between a buyer and their buyer's agent, regardless of what your last name is. It needs to be had with every single buyer. Our office policy is it is included with every single purchase and sale agreement, no matter whether it's in the areas or not, because I want to instill confidence in the seller that this person can purchase this property.
Right on. Deposits. I had somebody ask me the other day that if the deal falls apart, do they get their deposit back? In a nutshell, you would typically get your deposit back if the conditions have not been fulfilled, unless there's any objections by the lawyers, buyers, sellers. If all the conditions are removed and you walk away, say the day before closing, you changed your mind, well, you can probably kiss your deposit goodbye, and you also set yourself up for potential liability in that you could actually get sued for monies over and above that deposit. Does that sound right? Anything you want to add?
No, that is exactly the situation. I will stress, because this is another situation that has just come up in our office, it is my recommendation and advice, and it's also part of our association documentation, is to have a mutual release signed by both parties. This is not an opportunity for a seller to hold a buyer hostage and say, well, I'm not going to, you know, sign this that way. Therefore, I will end up with your deposit. You're not going to end up with the deposit as long as the buyer is protected with the clauses or conditions within the confines of the contract agreement on the table. However, like you said, Michael, if they're outside, they've removed all their conditions, and now they decide to walk, well, yes, your interest does, you know, present itself, and I wouldn't advise selling a mutual release. I'd suggest speaking to a lawyer. But if the person had a building permit or home inspection, they do not have to disclose why necessarily they're not, if it is a home inspection, because it's at their sole discretion. If they feel overwhelmed with whatever is on that list, that is fine. I do typically like to get a financial letter declining financing, just so I know it's not willy-nilly and they're not just changing their mind. I would recommend you get that. It shows good faith on your part. The deposit should be signed with a mutual release prior to conditions being outdated or expired. And yes, you could be in breach of contract if you try to pull out after the deal has firmed up.
Another condition I've been seeing recently, and I haven't seen this in a while since we lost most of our buyers from the States, is subject to viewings. Now, what these are is, let's say you're in another province or state, you really like the property, you've seen the video, the pictures, you've drawn up the maps, Google Street View, Google Satellite View. You're pretty confident you want this property, you're familiar with the area. So what do? You write an offer subject to viewing. So what this does is it typically is worded in such a way that it says this offer of purchase and sale is subject to me viewing the property within the next 10 days by 5 o'clock, whatever the date is, and I find this property acceptable, otherwise this offer is null and void. Are you seeing a lot of these offers recently?
Yeah, not as much as I did during the COVID chaos.
Yeah, I suppose that's another good example. We saw a lot of them back then, but that's something you can do to your advantage because it locks up that property, because inevitably Murphy's Law dictates that if you're looking at a property and you're deciding, well, I'm going to book a flight for a week and a half from now to go take a look at it, you're going to get here and that property's probably going to be sold.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point in why you would put this clause in. If you have intentions of traveling to the island, and this is the property that is at the top of your list that you definitely want it, it might be a good idea to contact a real estate agent, have a contract put in place, subject to viewing. You let the agents know, I have my ticket, I am going to be on the island on this date. Because I believe, Michael, you had a situation where the buyer ended up coming all the way, I don't know how long into the contract, I believe it was the last day of this clause, and they've done it a few times where they get here and then they decide, no, they're not going to buy the property.
Well, that's a different situation. What that was, and this has happened from time to time, where you get people that will write these subject to viewing clauses on their contracts, and they'll do this 3, 4, 5 times to the point where the agent's like, you're not even serious about buying, because a lot of times in this particular case, this buyer wasn't even flying out here to see the property. In fact, they're asking for an extension to the viewing, and both agents and the vendor said, no, you're not getting an extension. You've had 10 days now to get here. But that's just an isolated case. Most people that make a subject to viewing, I find in my experience, 99% of them close.
Yeah, most of them, because there's enough information and documentation online to help them make their decision.
Now, let me ask you another question in regards to contracts. Somebody's got an offer on a house, they're going to close in a month, all of a sudden they decide to change their mind and they say, Patty, I'd really like to extend the closing date out a couple more months, and we're willing to up the deposit. What do you say?
I first would like to know why they would like to have the contract extended. But then, and it's funny you mentioned this because I just went through this. I've had a busy week, it sounds like. I have just gone through this in the last week and a half where I was representing the seller and the buyer's agent needed another extension. And I just threw it back out at them and asked the buyer's agent, well, what kind of non-refundable deposit are you proposing in order to convince my seller to grant you this extension?
Or you can use union negotiating tools and say, oh yeah, you want to increase the deposit? I want 200,000. You got 10 on it now? I want 200. Because they're going to say, well, what do you want to increase it to? So just give them a ridiculous number that's so high, they're not going to do it. But it's also going to cause the purchaser to probably come up with a lot more of a deposit than they were previously thinking. Because they're probably thinking, oh, I'm going to raise it from 5 to 6. Where you're thinking, no, raise it from 5 to 50.
Yeah, don't negotiate with yourself on the seller's side, I think is what I believe the conversation that Michael and I are actually saying. As a seller, don't negotiate with yourself and throw out, well, an extra 5,000, will they accept an extra 5,000?
Negotiating with yourself.
Yes, do not negotiate with yourself. Throw it back out at the other party. Do this with everything in life. We're just advocates of, I don't negotiate with myself. Let me hear what you're going to offer. And you might find yourself chasing at your tail because no one wants to be the one to throw the first number out. So throw an inflated number, like you said, Michael, and they're obviously going to posture themselves in a position, well, I'm not willing to pay that. Well, you go. I've thrown out my number. It's your turn now.
I'm not throwing out a number. You're going to have to come up higher, much higher, much, much higher.
Yes. Don't negotiate with yourself.
The other thing you can do, and you see this more in commercial real estate than you do in residential real estate. In this particular case, you know, we're talking about someone extending the closing date by a couple of months. I'm getting a little bit nervous and jittery, thinking, do they not have their financing in place? Are they pulling investments out and all of a sudden they've plummeted because the market has crashed? I'm getting nervous. So I would go as far as saying, yeah, you can raise your deposit to X number of dollars, but we're also making it non-refundable at this point.
I agree.
That way, if they do walk away in 3 months, you're not sitting here saying, oh, great, I got their $2,500 deposit and I've wasted months of my life waiting for these people to put their get their act together.
Moving along.
Yes, it comes time for the humor part of the podcast, and something I just laugh at every time I hear it. And there's a particular brokerage brand on the island that's still using it decades later. It's the old, I got a buyer. So what the agent does, typically it's newer agents or desperate ones, is they'll phone up an expired listing and they'll say, Oh, yeah, I saw your property here and I got a buyer.
That also has just happened to me probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where they not called them up. They knocked on their door and said, I have a buyer interested in your home. And incidentally, this house was canceled. It didn't expire. We canceled it. Just the seller has some life things that they have going on, and they wanted a little bit of a break to deal with some personal matters. And we were going to be bringing this property back on in the new year. And within 48 hours of this happening, an agent knocked on the door and said they didn't realize it was on the market before.
What a pile of BS. What are the odds they would knock on that door in a residential area that has 400 houses in it?
Yeah.
Boy, they're lucky.
Yeah.
The best thing to say to that when they knock on your door, they phone you, which it typically doesn't happen, is you just get super excited because now they have a buyer. You tell them to write that contract up, which you know is going to be for more than it was ever on the market before. It has no conditions, and they can deliver it right down to their listing agent.
Yeah, and as a seller, because of the agent's claiming, they didn't know that the property was on the market before and they have a buyer. Why not offer it at a higher price? Apparently, this agent doesn't know how to go into the MLS system and see what the history and be aware that this property was on the market before. I'd throw it a higher price.
And they're buying a property. They've got a buyer for a property that they say they didn't know was on the market. So in theory, they don't know anything about it. And there's no pictures or room measurements or square footage or condition, but they get a buyer.
For sure. And this particular property was on the market for about a year and a half prior to. So I'm pretty confident. I will give them the benefit of the doubt. However, I did follow up with them again because my seller is so wonderful and they did redirect this agent to me. And there's, I appreciate my clients and their trust and their loyalty to me. I did follow up, asked, are you guys looking? Is your clients interested? Are you guys going to be submitting an offer? You have all the information, because we ended up putting in an information package together for this agent, all information that was provided on the MLS that the agent had access to, and the buyer's not interested.
What are the odds of that? And, you know, at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's a new agent and some idiot has probably given this agent this advice to give them the old, I got a buyer. And a lot of people would fall for this. I've seen them fall for it. Don't be a victim of this. They don't have a buyer. How do they have a buyer for something they know nothing about? Anyway, on that note, let's wrap it up, Patty. If you enjoyed the content of this chaos, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, give us a star rating and some feedback. And we both have YouTube channels and newsletters, which have even more stuff in them if you wish to join us over there as well.
We're coming close and we're still going to be doing a couple more before the end of the year, but it's been a really fun, you know, year so far, Michael, and I've learned a lot. It is an opportunity to kind of sharpen up our tools on real estate tips, tricks, and traps that we find ourselves into every day. It's always great to have conversations with you, Michael, hear some of your stories, and hopefully you feel the same. I really feel there's high value in this podcast, not only for ourselves, but hopefully the listeners at home that are tuning in to hear all our crazy stories and that we have. So thank you for listening and thank you for staying loyal, checking us out, and hopefully helps you in a future situation and prevents any bad predicaments from happening, because that's what it's all about.
Everybody have a fun-filled day. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, talk to you soon. Bye.